Greetings, and welcome to the Pressure BioSciences Incorporated First Quarter 2017 Financial Results Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Richard Schumacher. Thank you, Mr. Schumacher. You may begin.
And thank you, Tim, and welcome everybody to our first quarter 2017 financial review and business update. Before we start, as always, I need to read the following remarks. The following remarks may constitute forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Forward-looking statements involve known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors which may cause the actual results, performance, or achievements of the company to be materially different from any future results, performance, or achievements expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. Such factors include, among others, those detailed from time to time in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. We expressly disclaim any obligation or undertaking to release publicly any updates or revisions to any forward-looking statements to reflect any change in our expectations or any change in events, conditions, or circumstances on which such statements are based. The agenda today is that I'm pleased to have Joe DiMaggio with us. I think many of you, if not all of you, saw the press release a month ago when Joe rejoined Pressure Bio and joined us in his role as Vice President of Finance and Chief Financial Officer. So I'm going to turn it over to Joe, who's going to give a brief overview of the first quarter financial results. After that, we're going to follow with a general business update. And then we're going to be pleased to take a few questions. So, Joe?
Thank you, Rick. For the first quarter, total revenue increased to $551,000 as compared to $510,000 in Q1 2016, an increase of 8%. Products and services revenue increased 16% to $526,000 in the first quarter, current quarter, as compared to $454,000 for Q1 2016. This revenue increase was attributable to an increase of 19% in instrument sales from $332,000 in Q1 2016 to $396,000 in the current quarter. Consumable sales also increased from $44,000 in Q1 2016 to $63,000 in Q1 2017, an increase of 43%. Grant revenue decreased from $56,000 in Q1 2016 to $25,000 in Q1 2017. We believe grant revenue will increase over the remaining quarters in 2017. Operating loss decreased as a result of reduced R&D expenses and while with increases in product and services sales. Operating loss decreased to $999,000 in Q1 2017. From $1,046,000 in Q1 2016, reduction of 4%. Loss per common share, basic and diluted, was 18 cents for Q1 2017, compared to a loss per common share of 26 cents for the same period in 2016. As reported, we continued to show quarter-over-quarter revenue growth, especially in the important area of products and services. We also increased gross margins during the period. What makes these accomplishments even more rewarding was their achievement during a quarter in which we were also able to reduce operating expenses and operating loss. We believe the financial results of the first quarter 2017 have set us up well to significantly drive revenue and business growth for the rest of the fiscal year 2017 and beyond. And with that, I turn it back to Rick.
Thanks, Joe. I'm going to briefly comment on some of the successes of the first quarter of this fiscal year 2017. These were reported to a certain extent in our press release that went out today and in the Form 10-Q that was filed yesterday. I should mention that the 10-Q was filed yesterday or was attempted to be filed yesterday, early in fact, but as what happened in the third quarter of 2016, a number of companies, not just us, I mean, we understand it to be quite a large number of companies that tried to file around 4 o'clock or after. We're kicked out. We're not filed. We're all filed today, and we're expecting the same thing that happened when the SEC site went down in 2016, which is that although we filed an extension, it will be dated. We believe it'll be dated as if we filed yesterday. We did try to file, as we always do, on time, and this time actually an hour and a half or longer before it was due. And we and many others were unable to be accepted by the SEC site. Not sure what the problem was, not sure what happened last time, but we can assure you that we filed the extension anyway, but last time, and we hope this time, it'll be marked as coming in before it was due. So in addition to the good first quarter, which Joe just briefly went over, in the press release, we talked about several operational business successes that we achieved during the first quarter and also during the 6 weeks since that quarter ended. We view these accomplishments as extremely important to the growth and stability of the company, as we believe they are instrumental in helping to build the momentum that we need to drive future product revenue and drive the company's growth. And after we discuss those briefly, we'll open it up for Q&A. So in terms of the operational highlights during the first quarter, in February, we announced that we achieved CE marking for our new next-generation Barocycler Extreme, 2320 Extreme. This CE mark is required for companies before they can sell to any company in the European Union, and there are 31 such companies that require this CE mark. There are other countries outside of Europe that also will take a CE mark as a sign of quality and allow you to sell in their country. So this is a major accomplishment. We talked about it, I think, a lot during the last call, which was just last 6 weeks ago from the year of 2016 results. But it's important to note that we got our CE marking approval longer or long before I expected to. I'd say about 4 months before I expected to receive it from my experience. Very happy that we could get it early. It's a mark of quality. It's a mark to designate that the company is building has a quality system around its building of this instrument. And so it's not just required in many countries, but it's also good for shareholders to know that we have achieved a CE mark, which is telling you as shareholders that we've developed a quality system and our products are going to be developed through that quality system. So that's very important. The Barocycler 2320 Extreme in March received the 2017 North American Excellence Award for Best New Instrument for Sample Preparation. This came from Corporate American News, which is a large magazine once a year has these North American Excellence Awards. And some of these we apply for and haven't received before for previous products, but we're very excited that we were chosen and that our new instrument was chosen for the best new instrument in 2017 for sample preparation. They have by the way, a subscription list that exceeds 135,000 individuals. And in March, we started to bolster, as we said we would. It's a major goal of this year, bolster our sales and marketing capability. We started by contracting with EKG Sales Associates, which is a fairly well-known group out of the Chicago area that has been doing this for a number of years. They have tremendous contacts. They're able to get in and follow some of these individuals throughout their careers and call them up and let them know that a company like us exists and what our product does and would they be interested. So they're giving us warm, I'd say warm leads. Some of them have even come in warmer than warm. But it's wonderful to have a list of, you know, 50, 100, whatever leads every month. Now the problem with that up until about a month ago is that we didn't have the capacity to take care of all of these leads. And we're fixing that. As you know, we've hired two sales directors, one for the West Coast and one for the Midwest. We've interviewed, we've looked at a number of resumes, we've interviewed on the phone a number of people, and we've interviewed in person two people, one for the Mid-Atlantic down to Florida and over to Louisiana, a large area, and then one for the New England area. We believe we've told them both we're going to be making them offers. I believe the offers will be made before the week is out. We're hopeful that both will join us, and that our goal of having three up to four sales directors to start with as we build our sales team will be met and hopefully be met very soon. And these four people, together with Roxana, who is our director of sales and has been with us for over 10 years now, makes a really stellar sales group. And then internally, we've got Dr. Lawrence and several other people, particularly in our R&D group, to help them out in the marketing area. So we've clearly enhanced already, and we'll enhance even more, our sales and marketing team. So these are some successes that have happened during the quarter. We also made measurable progress in our goal to uplist the company to the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. We have said before on multiple occasions, and I say it again, it is our goal and it is our expectation that we will complete our uplist before the end of the second quarter, which is not that far away. So we're working very hard to achieve this goal. We understand how important it is for this company to be listed on a national accepted stock exchange like the NASDAQ Stock Exchange, because at this point in time, we have no institutional support really at all. I think we have, you know, a handful, maybe 10 or 20,000 shares from three institutions, and we need that institutional support. And as we have talked about also, there are restrictions for, unfortunately, for a number of brokers now for them to recommend a stock that's not on NASDAQ or a stock that's under $5 a share or both. And we happen to be both. And because of that, we don't get a lot of support in the investment community from either institutions or stockbrokers. And it does hurt the company. We believe we're doing extremely well. We believe that the best is yet to come. And yet, we don't believe that future, let alone the present, is built into our stock. We think we are significantly undervalued at current prices. The other issue that or progress I want to talk about briefly, and I cannot go into any details, and I can't really, even if you ask me in the Q&A, any details. We're not resting on our laurels. We have a brand new instrument that's won an international award. We have key opinion leaders that have bought it and that are talking about it in their talks. But we know we have to do a lot more to get this company to the trajectory to where we want to take it. And so we've continued to work on other areas. For instance, we've talked before, not recently, about these other two instrument lines we have. We have what's called the Hub 440 and the Hub 880. These go to higher pressures and are built more for really deep research labs. And we have not focused on these for the last couple of years. We've sold a couple a year, maybe three or four 440s and one or two 880s that we've sold, but we really haven't focused on them because there are certain things that we want to do to make them better, to make them ready for prime time. And our expectation is that we will get them out into the market in a more aggressive format in terms of our sales and marketing this year. So we were working on the Hub 440 and the Hub 880. As everyone knows, these are built. They are already in the hands of a number of scientists who are feeding us information. But we believe that both of these have a role in the commercial growth of this company, and perhaps a big role in the commercial growth of this company. So it's important for us to find time we don't have, but it's important for us to find time to try to get these to over the hump so that these can become as aggressively sold and marketed as our 2320 Extreme. We also have made some progress, which I'm not at liberty to go on into now, in the development of an improved rape kit test. This is something that we will talk about in future meetings, future conference calls. We've had collaborations with a lot of key opinion leaders around the world, and those will continue, but we also have collaborations ongoing with companies, usually small companies, that have products that we think can be enhanced if we were able to bring PCT to combine with that company's product. So we have several products, companies and products in mind that we spend some time on because we realize that when we go into a lab to sell a 2320 Extreme, that they may buy that, but they also may need something else, or it might not be exactly what they need. And there are other products out there that we believe we can enhance with PCT that might be added to the product list that our new sales team will have when they take the time to enter such labs. We have a wonderful array of consumable products, and we haven't had much time recently in the last year and a half to spend time. We have some ideas on how to improve several of these products, and we are actually ongoing developing these. So again, in future quarters, we can talk about these, and we certainly feel that certain improvements can be made that will enable some of these products to maybe reach out to applications and application areas that they're not being used at right now. And certainly, we believe that our continued collaborations with the key scientists around the world are going to continue, not just with the ones that we've been fortunate to work with, but some additional groups that are now coming on board. And more about that later, but I believe and we believe that these groups are going to bring our technology into new areas of the research lab that the 2320 doesn't quite fit in, right now, but with the help of some of these key opinion leaders and their ability to work in these areas with our instrument and present and publish data in that area, I think it's going to open up some additional areas. The areas right now are pretty big. I've talked about that before, but we think they're even bigger, and we're working on a number of things. So once we complete the uplist, and once we get our sales force all together, and we're talking weeks and not months, we believe, we want to make sure that we have a continued supply of new consumables and new instruments and new application areas that our sales team is going to be able to go to. So, Tim, that's what I wanted to say, and Joe wanted to say. We're going to turn it over now to the group that took the time to jump on the phone call with us, and we'd be happy to open it up for a couple of questions.
Thank you. At this time, we will be conducting the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue, and you may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Charlie Boyd, a private investor. Please proceed with your question.
Hey, Rick. Great review, buddy. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I'm wondering, we sold 3 boxes to that the SciEx project, the Moonshot. I'm just wondering, could you give us any kind of an update how that project's going? You know, are they making great
Yes.
progress there? I know they're using 3 of our machines. I just was curious about that.
Well, actually, there's 4. There's 4 that went to the to the laboratory, and this is the group that is the Children's Medical Research Institute in Sydney, Australia, and they actually have 4, and they are, we spoke with the person who is the technical person in charge, and he said that the samples are really starting to flow in now. You know, all of these things in life take time to get started, but this one is really getting started. And we're hoping that it gets started enough that they're going to, we told them that they need a couple more instruments. They're not there yet, but we hope they get there. But I actually want to add on to your comment and say that that's 4 instruments that went to CMRI. We also have sold of the first, let's say it's about 18 instruments in the first run that we made. I believe that about 40% of them went to Cancer Moonshot customers. And most of those were SciEx customers. So, and we at this point have purchase orders in hand for instruments for the second quarter. And I mentioned this in our conference call last month that we're now making the instruments for the second quarter. We believe they'll be made in plenty of time to ship, but several of the groups that have given us purchase orders are also SciEx customers. So it's going well. Obviously, we'd like it to go better. We push them. They're a big company of 3,000 people. We're a company of 9, now going to 14, now at 14, maybe going to 16. And we think we want to move faster. And I believe that there's a happy medium between as fast as we want to run and as fast as they want to run, somewhere in the middle. You haven't heard the end of this, in our opinion. This is just the beginning. We now have the right machine for the task at hand, which is to sit in front of a SciEx mass spectrometer. The previous machine did it, but nothing like the current machine, which has more capabilities than the other one. So it's going well, and I think and we expect it to actually go better as the year progresses.
Good. Thank you very much.
I would like to remind all of our participants at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Jeffrey Scott of Scott Asset Management. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon, Rick.
Hi, Jeff.
Following on to that that moonshot explanation you just gave, if I read between the lines, you sold 4 to Sydney and another 3 went to cancer moonshot locations. Would that be right?
At least 3, Jeff. I can get you the exact number. I would say at least 3. That would be 7 of the first 18 that we built.
And that would get you the 40%, yeah.
Yeah, so I would say minimum of that 40% went to Cancer Moonshot customers.
Okay, did those additional 3 or 4 go to one location or 4 locations or something in the middle?
Well, we sold 4 to Sydney. Other than that, I think the biggest location we have was 2.
Yep.
I can't go into it, but we're hopefully we'll have more to talk about that down the road. A very important laboratory in the U.S., very well-known researcher that bought 2 of our systems that, honestly, we've been, I'd say 4 years we've tried to get him interested, at least 3 years.
Yeah.
And he called us up at the end of the year and said, okay, I see everything, I'm interested. And so 2 instruments went to this scientific researcher, and maybe one other place got 2, but most of the others were onesies.
Okay. The essence of my question really is, did these other locations talk to Sydney and find out that the samples were so good that they had to buy your machine, or was it a function of SciEx going in and the moonshot already had funding, so if they didn't have to wait to find out where the money was, and SciEx was able to give them a very good reason to use the funding to buy a machine?
Actually,
you see what I'm getting at?
Actually, the sale in Sydney of the 4 instruments came as much from our efforts as from Sydney's, from SciEx's. And it was a combination, and that's perfect. That, you know, we both had something to add, and we both sold. But I have to also give credit to one of our largest users, not largest in terms of size, but largest in terms of prestige, and that's Professor Rudy Ebersold from Zurich, Switzerland. He had published 4 papers, and I believe in the last 2 years, that talked about the advantages of PCT swath, PCT being pressure bio and swath being SciEx. And the thing that started them was reading the paper and calling both SciEx and us and saying, we read Dr. Ebersold's paper. We want to learn more about, on our side, PCT, on their side, swath. So it wasn't SciEx going in and selling it, and we were just the beneficiary. We were actively selling it along with SciEx, and that's the way it should be in a co-marketing deal.
Okay, next question. In the first quarter, we got CE mark, and you talked about that basically being the door opener for the European markets and your selection of a European distributor. Can you talk about what the prospects are for European sales over the next Q2, Q3, Q4?
I think that we've had one or two sales in Europe. Do you remember offhand, Joe? One or two sales in Europe this year in the first, maybe one. No. Yeah, maybe one or two in the first quarter in Europe. Next call, Jeff, I promise we'll now that Joe's online, we're going to be we'll have more data with us. As you know, I've had to carry this wear this hat for the last 2 years.
You've done everything.
So, well, I didn't want to, but as you know.
I know.
But one of the problems in wearing too many hats is I can't bring all the data with me, and sometimes I don't even have all the data. With Joe on board, Joe will come. I see him making furious notes here. He's going to come next time with some information, because knowing sales in Europe versus sales in the U.S., most of our sales are in the U.S., but we expect Europe and Asia to add. Now, we have sales. We've had sales in China, maybe four in the last five quarters. Maybe three or four. We've had sales in Europe last year, maybe I'd say four total last year and this year. That's a drop in the bucket to what we expect going forward. It's not going to happen overnight. The spigot doesn't get turned on, but we're expecting that what they've done in the year, I'm certainly hoping they're doing that, in a lot shorter period of time before the end of this year. So this is not something that we expect is going to take a year or two to build. They've already been trained. They already knew about us. They are a distributor years ago. They came back about a year ago. And I'm expecting good sales growth in this year, including the second quarter.
Yep.
And we'll have numbers for you next time.
Okay. In terms of manufacturing, you talked about, I think, a batch of 18 and then a batch of 30. Are there estimates for total manufacturing for Q2 and again for all of 2017?
We built 18 instruments in our first run. We built 23, and 18 were sold, and five were out. Two of them were out on evaluation that let's keep our fingers crossed, because they're at multi-billion-dollar multinational companies that we think could buy more than one. And then the other three are being used. One of them is being used in our own lab, and two of them are being used for demos. We're setting up demo labs where these will end up. Right now we have to ship them as a demo. We try not to do that because it's expensive and time consumes. That's why it's 18 out of the 23. We're going to build 25 instruments, of which I believe that all 25, or at least 23 or 24 of the 25, will be available for sale. And we're building them now. All of the parts have been purchased for the first five, every single part, and for the remaining 20, all of the long lead items and all of the expensive parts have been purchased, pretty much paid for, and we shipped them over to our manufacturer on yesterday morning at 10 a.m. So it will take them about 2 weeks to build the first two, and about a week to build the next three, and about a week to build the next three. So I don't expect it will adversely impact our sales. We do have customers that have sent us purchase orders, and we've told them, sorry, but we sold out of the previous version, so you're going to have to wait. I don't believe that we're going to have any problem shipping every order. We're hungry. We're going after every order we can get, Jeff. But we will be building 25 instruments, and we are already, we haven't put the order in yet, but we're already putting the orders together to buy the parts for the next build of 25, which is a good number. We get a good price when we buy the parts. When we buy them in 25s, we don't get much more of a discount if we bought them in 50s, but we get killed if we buy them in 10s or 12s. So 25 is a good number for most machine shops. So expect these 25 will be built over the next couple of months, And we're hoping they don't last us this year, so we're putting together, we're getting ready for, that wasn't guidance, that was just a hope that they don't last us this year. I want to make that clear, Jeff, because
okay.
I know you listen to every word, so nothing wrong with that.
I do. The next thing is not really pertinent to history, but pertinent to the future. You've talked about the company being a razor blade model. And when you think of razor blades, you think of Gillette, particularly in the Boston area, right? And you buy the razor
right.
for $5, and you end up spending $15 on consumables every year. If somebody buys a machine from you for let's say you net $25,000 out of it, and using the Gillette razor blade to razor ratio of 3-1, that would be $75,000 of consumables. I don't think you're ever going to get there. But going back to what you've had to do in the past, you've had to get into research labs, which are the people who control the papers, the peer evaluation kind of stuff, and they are not high users of consumables. Eventually, the value in this company is going to largely result from the throughput of the machines in high usage locations. Sydney has, if I remember the first press release, they were going to do 70,000 samples over 7 years, which would be 10,000 samples per year divided by three machines, 3,300 units consumables per machine per year. That's still a laboratory environment. If you talk about getting into some of the high usage areas, you had two demos out, I think one in Europe, one in the U.S., of people who were contemplating using it on a commercial basis. You have people like LabCorp and Quest who conceivably could use it in a very commercial setting. What would, if you were to try to paint a picture of what consumables could eventually arrive at, what would that be?
Well, they'll be across the board. Certainly, Sydney at 10,000, that's 10,000 samples, and you need to add probably 20% on for wastage, or bad runs, controls. So I think it's easy to get to 12,000 a year minimum. So
for
there's
three machines.
But in many cases, as in the case of Sydney, we're not the holdup. It may be the machine downstream from us that's the holdup.
Yep.
We can do things faster, and they want to have things ready, but it could be the machine downstream. If the machine downstream could do it in 5 minutes, we might be able to convince them to buy more instruments. So you got to look at it. We're not usually a standalone instrument. We're there in front of somebody else. We're fulfilling a need. They have a need to break this virus or this bacteria, this cell open, and we're there to fulfill it. But once we fulfill it, that sample may sit for a few minutes or a few hours before it's analyzed. Now, there are other machines that work much faster. We have put ourselves in a position of going after the low-hanging fruit, Jeff, and the low-hanging fruit primarily offered to us is putting it in front of a mass spectrometer. Number one, it works great. It just works great. We think it works better than anything that's on the market anywhere in the world. That's what we believe. And we base it on the publications that come out talking about the quality of the results that come from PCT extracted samples versus bead beater and other extracted samples. So we believe that strongly. But the mass spectrometer is only one of many machines in the lab. We've not the time or the funds to go after anything else up to now. We don't even have the time and funds to really adequately go after the mass spec. That's why we're doing what we're doing, and we expect that that this market is just, we're just touching the beginning of the mass spectrometry market. But to answer your question more fully, I'm not going to give you an exact number because I've never given that number out. I would say, however, that we sell an instrument that, as you can see from our numbers, is about four to six times our sales in any given quarter, our instrument sales versus consumables. That's going to change. We want the consumables to increase. However, The people that tell you that they want to be 95% consumables and they give away the instruments are often people that are giving away their instruments. They're not making money on the instruments. I can get a free handle for my Gillette blades anytime I need a free handle, but I'm going to buy the Gillette blades. We don't give away our instrument. I'm not going to say that a year, 2 years from now, that might be a worthwhile marketing ploy to look at. But right now, we get a 60%, give or take, gross margin on our instrument, and we get maybe a 70%, 65, 70% gross margin on our consumables. So as long as our instruments can demand a gross margin in the 60% range, our investors are not going to do bad by the fact that we have more instruments revenue coming in than consumable revenue. That said, our goal is to let that consumable revenue surpass the instrument revenue as soon as we can, but right now not by reducing the price of the instrument to where we have to give it away or just break even. That is not in our plans.
I was not suggesting that at all. What I was suggesting is that eventually you will be able to move from a lab that has a minimum usage. Once it's proven in the lab, then a large commercial pharma company decides to put it into a commercial location because it works so wonderfully. And instead of using 10 units a day in a lab, it's now using 1,000 units in a lab. And
well,
there's an economic benefit to that. You had two demos that were out with commercial firms. I think you said they were large pharma firms, one in Europe and one in the U.S. How are those going, and what is the timeline for kind of a decision framework for them?
They're going very well. I don't want to tempt the devil. You know me well enough to know that
exactly.
I'm a superstitious guy, and I do worry. It's kind of silly, but I do. I am superstitious. I'm not going to tempt the devil. I'm knocking on wood as we speak, but they're going very well. We're expecting that that one or both of these companies are going to become our customer this year, maybe even soon this year. I don't know, but I would say that I want to go back to your other point, though. You're right. There are labs that run a lot, even though CHMI it runs a lot of samples at 70,000. There are labs that can run 70,000 samples in a year, not 7 years. There are labs that run 1,000 samples in a day. They're screening. They're screening compounds. They're screening environmental agents. They're screening tissues, whatever. So we're not there yet, as you know. It's not a place that we would go to yet, but it is certainly a place that places. There are multiple places that we will be going to in the future, when we're ready for prime time. Right now, we're taking care of the guys that run anywhere from a few dozen samples a week to as you said, maybe hundreds and hundreds of samples a week, like in CMRI, and we're learning a lot, and the best instrument we have is not the one that's on the market to do large scale. The best instrument we have is the one that we made eight of and sold five, I believe, the Barozyme, which takes the microwell strips. But as we sold those five and they went to some really key accounts, we learned a lot. And that's one of the instruments along with the Hub 440 and the Hub 880. The three of them are on our back burner. The good news is we're not scrapping any of them. The better news is we think that all three are going to be winners going forward, and we've already spent a lot of money and a lot of time. So as soon as we get done with the task at hand, which we think will be done before the end of the second quarter, we can turn our focus to sales, marketing, and the development of these three instruments that are, I'd say 70, 80, 90% there. They just need some work. Which we will have time to do in just a short period of time, this year. So that's the best instrument to do, the Barozyme, to do the ones that somebody wants to do 1,000 samples in a day or in a week. We have an instrument that I believe will be ready before the end of the year that will be able to do that. And in the meantime, we got a lot of moms and pops that are going to actually pay more than those labs. Those labs will beat you down, as you know, Jeff.
Yep.
They'll beat you down on the price of the instrument. They'll beat you down on the price of the tubes and the disposables. But in the meantime, we're gonna go after the smaller labs and place hopefully every one of these instruments as soon as we can. And we do not expect that the build of 25 we're building now is something that's gonna last us as long as the last build of 25 or 18. Not even close.
Okay, last follow-up, and then I'll drop. The two that were demoed out to the commercial side are the 2320 Extremes.
Correct.
Would they defer a decision until you develop the Barozyme?
No.
Or would they go ahead and buy the second best and wait for the Barozyme?
Well, you say they're commercial. Many of our customers are commercial. We sell to a lot of biopharmas, biotech companies. So I was just, when I said, I'm not sure I used the word commercial. I think I used the word, multi-billion dollar biopharmaceutical companies. These are large, and there's a lot of those. There's certainly more than you can count on your fingers and your toes around the world. And there's a lot of them that are working in areas where, yes, they could use a lot of tubes, but they also could give us a lot of notoriety if they were to buy one or two or three or five of these instruments and use it for a specific purpose. And that purpose may or may not be for 1,000 samples a day. But in some cases, it may not be at all for 1,000 samples a day. But when others see what they're doing, we believe that others are going to come calling. And we'll sell, hopefully.
So they would not defer a decision until the
development
of the
Barozyme. Okay. Absolutely not.
I've taken up too much of your time. Thanks very much.
You're welcome, Jeff.
Our next question comes from the line of Dan Wong, a private investor. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
Hey, Dan. I'm well. Thank you.
Let me jump into it real quick. So kind of to go back on what the previous gentleman was talking about on the consumables, obviously you've been making a lot of progress there as far as getting the sales team going and the new instruments, and I'm sure everyone would welcome you getting to the NASDAQ. Obviously that would get a lot more interest, but I think a lot of the things that investors and people like to look at is, what's going to get you to critical mass? What's going to really get you to those next revenue numbers? I know sales are increasing, but what really multiplies those?
Okay. So what's going to get us to that critical mass? First of all, I should tell you that everybody here believes we will get there. That's why we work so hard, and that's why almost – I would say three-quarters of the people in this company have been in this company for 10 years or longer, committed, dedicated to this technology because it's so powerful, so exciting, and can be so big. We believe we will get there. Critical mass is not where you get, in my opinion, if you do one thing here well or another thing here. You need to combine, and that's what we're doing right now. We are building a sales force. We built a brand new instrument. We have a new consumable. We have collaborators who are publishing papers with new and improved applications. We're building an infrastructure. We took 2,000 feet more underneath us. We don't need it now, but we plan on needing it later this year. We didn't have a loading dock. We didn't have a storage area. We now have a space to grow, and we have a space to store and a loading dock. We're building for success, and I've done this before, and I see too many people make the mistake when they do it too soon. They take too much space. They build a sales team before it's time, etc. We haven't done that, in my opinion. So the critical mass is going to come when the perfect storm hits. And we are clearly stating that we believe that 2017 is when that perfect storm is coming in, because, and I can't tell you, when it's going to hit and how long it's going to take to materialize, but we believe that you have to have the confluence of the sales team and the new instrument and the new consumables and the key opinion leaders and the applications and the data, the recipes, We have all of this. We have it all in different states, but it's all coming together. And our goal is to let it come together at the same time we do something that is not related to that part of the business, but the investor side, which is to move up to NASDAQ. So we're trying to get our financial ship in shape. We are trying to move the company up to a national stock market. And at the same time, we have all of these floating pieces, and every one of them is making progress. And we've talked about, if you look at the last two or three press releases, every one of them is making progress. And I believe that they're all going to come together pretty quickly. So our goal was to have them all come together at the same time that we got our financial ship together and our move to NASDAQ. And as you know, we've talked often, even today, about having trying to get that done and hoping to get that done and expecting to get done before the end of June. So things are happening, and I believe that what you talked about is a big potential once all these things come together.
Thanks for that. Congratulations. We look forward to it.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
There are no further questions over the audio portion of the conference. I'd now like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Schumacher for closing remarks.
Well, first of all, I want to end the call by welcoming Joe back. I think it's a major, major positive for the company. My role can be changed going forward. I've spent a lot of my time working on the financial and administrative end of the company that Joe is better at than I am, and Joe will do a better job than I've done. And it will allow me to spend what I think I'm good at, which is building a company, building the operations, sales and marketing team, working with my guys that are doing that. So his coming on board is a wonderful benefit for the company, not just because he's a good accounting guy, but because he's a good overall accounting administrative guy who can take this whole brunt off of me and allow me to do something that I think I can do better. So I appreciate Joe coming back and welcome him back. I think that one thing that I kind of wrote a note to myself to say before we end is I get a lot of people over the years, particularly over the last 6 months, who look at our revenue and say, yeah, that's great, but you know, when are you going to become a $10 and $20 million company? And I think the important thing, what I tell them and what I'm saying now is we don't believe that the current revenue, you know, adequately, properly reflects the growth trajectory of the company. And that's a problem. Sometimes you lament and say, I wish we didn't have any revenue. Because once you have revenue, there's a stake in the ground. And yes, our revenue is going up 20, 30, 40% every year, sometimes, you know, in a quarter. But that's not what you want to see. And we realize that. But I think that up to now, we've had to work with trying to build our sales with a very limited sales team, very limited cash, and a lot of other things that are going on with a very small team of 9 people. Per Dan's question about, you know, this perfect storm, we believe it's all coming together. We believe that we have done a good job in building the different areas that are going to bring momentum to this company and hopefully to the stock and to the value of the stock to the shareholder. And we believe it's all coming together at the same time as we wanted with an uplist to NASDAQ. And really, this is a new company. This is a new company. You know, the next time we meet, which will be middle of August, I hope we're Joe and I are the CEO and CFO of what I would call a new company, a company that is intent on commercializing its incredible technology and has already built the base to do it and now has the team and the people and the operations and the infrastructure to do it. That's what we've been building for the last year or two, and it's very exciting to think that where this company can be in the next month or two, let alone the next year or two. So I'd leave it on that, and thank everybody for your time. Thank everybody for your continued support. Remind everybody that I'm always available. You can just call into the company and ask for me. I take everybody's phone call, and I know Joe will too. So this is your company, so please feel free to call if we didn't answer something or it was confusing. And other than that, look forward to talking to everybody in the middle of August.